Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a bass down. Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I'm Branham. It is Brian behind the glass. It is a Monday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It is a victory Monday. Another victory Monday. These Texans, man, they don't lose. 4-1. They're 3-0 at home. The Texans just continuing to roll, Blankers.
I love it. I'm surprised that more people in Houston aren't happy about it, I would say. But I love the fact that this team is sitting 4-1 after 5 games. And I actually love the fact that they aren't playing perfect football across the board, because if you still have more improvements to make, it means you can still get better, yet you're still sitting at a 4-1 record, and I think that says something about this team.
I was thinking, like, everybody's talking about how, you know, the Texans still haven't played their best. They still haven't played their perfect game, all of that. How often in the NFL do you play a perfect game? How often? How many times a year does it happen where from kickoff to the final horn, you're like, that was perfection. That was Texans football. That's what we're all about. That's one where he didn't make a single mistake the entire – that was perfection. How many times does that happen over the course of the season?
Yeah, I don't think it happens for an entire game.
Once?
Twice for
maybe
the Texans
twice.
Last year?
Yeah, I mean, not like, you know, you're going to make mistakes even in a perfect game.
Sure.
But in terms of, like, the perception of whenever you leave a game and you win by 20, you're like, that's Texans football. That's the Texans playing up to their potential. That's what we expect to see. How many times does that actually happen over the course of a full NFL regular season?
Maybe,
a couple times.
Yeah, maybe.
Like the Browns playoff game, we would say that.
I was going to say one or two.
I was going to say three or four.
Okay, so somewhere in that range of 1 to 4 times. And it probably depends on the team. Like, you're certainly not saying if you're the Carolina Panthers almost ever. And if you're a really good team, maybe you have really lofty expectations. Like, the Chiefs last year won the Super Bowl. They had the second best defense in the NFL. Their offense didn't live up to expectations. Do you think Kansas City one time last year said, oh, yeah, we played a perfect game?
No,
probably,
because remember,
not
most of the first half of the season, they were struggling and there was fingers being pointed all over the place about them being far less than what people had rated them. I think the opponent matters, too. I think a lot of times people are going to be highly critical when you play a lesser than team, no matter how you play. And even if you play well, you're supposed to do that because they're not very good. But then you beat a team like Buffalo and say, yeah, you know, but, and there's a lot, but Buffalo is a damn good football team, and we saw early in the season how everybody was changing their tune and thinking the Bills were one of those teams that was still going to compete for a Super Bowl. Now you beat the Bills, and they're like, yeah, but, you know, they lost the Ravens last week, and they got guys out. Everybody does.
Not for me, though. Like, I don't, and they did. I mean, I think Shakir's their best receiver, and they lacked some punch in the receiver room yesterday. Like, I saw a bunch of people, well, this is why the Buffalo Bills needed Stephon Diggs. Come on. I don't think that yesterday's issue was that they didn't have an upper echelon receiver. I think it was that Josh Allen wasn't very good, and there's a reason that he wasn't very good. They were without Ed Oliver, who might be their best defensive player. Go Cougs, and I don't say that as a homer. He might be their best defensive player. So, yes, they missed some people, but the Texans were without some people, too. And, like, it's the NFL. So I'm not making the excuses of, oh, well, no, the Texans are not upper echelon yet because they beat, you know, a wounded Buffalo team. I'm on the other side of it. I do think that the Houston Texans are an upper echelon team in the NFL. Do I think that they're on par with the Chiefs? No. Do I think they're on par with the Baltimore Ravens? No. But do I think they're a top five team in the NFL? What I would consider upper echelon? I do. And I didn't feel that way before yesterday's game. But you beat Buffalo. Yes, a wounded Buffalo, but you're wounded too. In my opinion, the Texans are officially, in my opinion, and it doesn't even really matter. This isn't tangible. You're not going to the postseason and be like, well, in everybody's opinion, we're upper echelon, so we must win. Like, it's why you play the games. But in my opinion, and I think that it should be in everybody's opinion, that the Texans did prove yesterday that they do belong in the upper echelon of the NFL.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think part of that is also because of the fact that as much as we didn't know what we didn't know about the Texans, and we're still finding that out based on everything that they did in the offseason, you didn't know what you didn't know about a lot of other football teams, too, where we thought the San Francisco 49ers and I thought the Philadelphia Eagles were going to be the cream of the crop in the NFC. I didn't pencil the Vikings into my scorecard as being the best team in the NFC and the best team in their division and a playoff team based on what I saw and who was playing quarterback. So I think that they've slid down the chart quite a ways for me until they prove otherwise. And the Texans, because of the fact that even when they've played poorly, they found a way to win. And when it really matters, they've constructed drives and gotten key points to where I think that they are in that top handful of teams in the NFL, regardless of if they peaked or not and what the other circumstances may be.
That was my biggest takeaway from the game yesterday, is that the Texans do belong. Whether you think that they were close to perfection, whether you think that they beat a wounded Buffalo team, in my opinion, they prove that they belong in the upper echelon of the NFL. What they did to Josh Allen yesterday, how many teams do that? And yes, I'm not the biggest Josh Allen guy, but Josh Allen puts up numbers. Josh Allen wins a bunch of games. Josh Allen can single-handedly beat teams. Josh Allen will have 300 total yards on you like it's nobody's business. And the Houston Texans did to Josh Allen, a top five quarterback in the NFL, something that hasn't been done in modern NFL history. So yes, like, tip your cap to the Houston Texans defense. Tip your cap to D'Amico Ryans. There was a lot of bad that happened in yesterday's game, and like, I think that happens over the course of every NFL game, and we'll get to that because we do not ignore in victory what you would in defeat. We couldn't miss the opportunity to bang on the Texans. But they prove that they belong in the conversation with some of the best teams in the NFL. Are they the best team? No. Are they a top two team in the AFC? I'm not there right now. But in my opinion, they are upper echelon in the NFL, and they proved it because they beat Buffalo yesterday.
You know, here's the other thing, too, Jeremy. When we talk about the three phases of the game, you don't have to be perfect for the entire game, but you got to be close to it when it matters, like with less than 2 minutes to go in the game, or when you need a score before the end of the half or the end of a football game. And what we've seen so far this year is when you give the Texans an opportunity to win with some time on the clock, they execute. When you think about, well, you know, what went wrong for the Buffalo Bills, and you're right, what they did to Josh Allen, they drove him nuts all day long. This was the leading candidate in all of the NFL for MVP after four games of the regular season, and you had him spinning around trying to figure out what he could and couldn't do to try and gain some kind of yardage. When you look at the special teams and the fact that your punter pinned them inside the five when he absolutely had to, your defense did their job, and then with minimal time on the clock, they once again proved they can get you where you need to go to get points when you absolutely have to have them and can't afford a mistake. Those are the kind of things that say, well, you don't have to be perfect in all three phases for the entire game, but when it matters, especially when you're down, and we've seen it in multiple games this year, they do what they need to do.
I think part of it's the C.J. Stroud effect a bit, but you can make the case that yesterday in the final minute of the game, Stroud didn't have to do a whole lot. And you could point the finger at Stroud a little bit on that intentional grounding. Now, I don't really put that on Stroud. Like, that was an awful play call. We'll get into that. And do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. But yes, they've won close games. Now, some people will look at that the other way and be like, well, they're winning a lot of close games. They got blown out in the game that they lost. Maybe this is a lucky team. I don't know if I would go that far, because the Texans have proven even last year that they're winning those close games. I think that it has something to do with C.J. Stroud. I think it has something to do with the mentality of the Texans that they can close out the good games or the winning games, the close games. And you brought up an interesting point. Like, all of those areas, the Texans had to be really good in the final minute in three areas after the intentional grounding. Tommy Townsend pinned the Bills back at the three, and Townsend wasn't great yesterday prior to that, and Townsend really hasn't been all that good this year, but Townsend, a Texan, when they needed him, pinned the Bills at the three-yard line. The defense was really good all day yesterday, but they forced a three and out. Josh Allen was throwing deep against the Texans on first and second down. The Texans were up for it. A couple of incompletions, three incompletions, they get the football back. Robert Woods, who I thought was mostly good, he had a couple of questionable decisions in punt return, like trying to catch the ball inside the five-yard line, not once, but twice. An amazing return. Like, and he understood the moment, too. Catches the ball, beeline right up the middle of the field, not dancing, isn't going laterally, makes the catch, gets it up the field as quickly as possible. And the offensive play wasn't much, but the presence of mind that I need to be quick, we have to get a few yards here, take the quick timeout, and then Kyami Fairbairn was able to knock in the game winner. So, like, those areas, especially Townsend, especially Woods, and then the offense, which was sputtering in the entire second half, they were not good in the second half or the entire game yesterday at times. Yet in that final minute, all three of those phases came up huge.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's the thing, too. Even the offensive play call at the time, it had several different options, but they were all focused on one, get the yards, but also we had one timeout in our back pocket. We have to use it. We have to get down quickly, no matter where it is. So he had the options. The middle of the field opened up. You catch it. You get down. You call the timeout. You manage the clock correctly. You had the timeout you needed. You're punting. You're kicking. Your defense. Everything fell into play when you absolutely had to have it. And it's not the first time we've seen it all year. We've seen it at the end of the first half several times. More importantly, we saw it in the Jacksonville game. We saw it when you need to do it at the end of football games, too. And you're right. That factors into the C.J. Stroud effect, which is, yeah, he made a bad throw. And, yeah, we can talk about some of the throws that weren't perfect or things that, you know, maybe they did get a little lucky on. But overall, when you got to have a guy at the helm that is in complete control, that can control his emotions, that knows where the ball needs to go, more times than not, he's shown you he's that guy.
Yeah, he's got the clutch gene. Like, he has the it factor. People kind of don't love hearing that. I think most people like hearing it. You have a very vocal minority that, oh, you're overrating him. I don't think so. Like turn on the film. C.J. Stroud's doing some incredible things on the football field. Even in the second half in which he had two turnovers and the offense was sputtering and the offense had trouble scoring. Like, he is creating and making plays out of nothing. The guy's good. The guy's really good. What'd you make of the Bills' decision 32 seconds after Tommy Townsend pinned him down at the 3-yard line? A lot of people are losing their minds about Sean McDermott's decision there.
Yeah, he's even owning it. But I think, you know, at that point in the game, that's a tough situation because you believe when you have Josh Allen, too, that you're going to try and get it down into field goal range. But when it doesn't go your way right away, I think your primary thing is I'm on the road. I'll take a chance at overtime rather than making a mistake on, you know, pinned back against my own goal line, and I thought that they would run some clock. I thought that they would end up trying a running play. I thought they would challenge the Texans to start burning some timeouts, but they didn't. I was extremely amazed at how much time didn't run off the clock, mm-hmm. And even still, I was like, well, do they have enough time? And you mentioned Woods. Woods made a hell of a play just to keep time on the clock enough to get the one, you know, quick down on a play and get it down in time to save a second or two.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was a little surprised in the way they called the final three plays.
I think that he's getting too much blame for that. And I ran a social experiment on Twitter today, and I put the scenario, same exact scenario, do you trust C.J. Stroud in this moment? And 75% were like, yeah, let C.J. Stroud try to score in that spot. I probably do. Like, I probably let C.J. Stroud in that same moment see what I got. Now, I don't love the pass call on first down. I probably run it first down, kind of a heat check or a very high percentage passing play, maybe a screen, although that's a little problematic so close to the end zone. I probably run a heat check play there and then see where I'm at after,
like,
first down.
Pad yourself to prevent the safety.
Yeah.
And then see if I get some good positive yards, now I can do something.
Plus, I also like the idea of kind of deceiving the defense where it's like, okay, we're going to run the ball here on first down. Maybe we get 3 or 4 yards, and then the defense is like, they're probably going to take a timeout. D'Amico's going to take a timeout in that spot. Okay, they think we're running the ball. All of a sudden, you're passing out of a run look, or you're even running a little play action. I don't mind McDermott and the Bills being aggressive with a top-5 quarterback because – look, if the game goes to overtime, you might be at the mercy of a coin. If C.J. Stroud was in that same spot, I want the Texans to be aggressive there and try to get into Kyahmi Fairbairn field goal range. So I thought McDermott's taking too much heat for that. I don't love the play call on first down the most. I thought the defensive play by the Buffalo Bills and the final offensive play for the Texans after they got the ball back after the Woods punt return just ahead of the Kyahmi Fairbairn field goal, what were they doing? Like, they dropped 11 men.
They dropped 11 men. They had two safeties way back.
They're like, here you go. Here's an automatic 5 yards, and then we're going to take the timeout. I thought that was the bigger crime than being aggressive on the offensive end. If you had C.J. Stroud, same exact situation. You're a tie game, 32 seconds. You're at the 3-yard line. What are you doing if you're the Texans? If you have C.J. Stroud,
I'm taking my chances. I'm living and dying with C.J. Stroud because, like, we just got done talking about, he's shown with just about that much time on the clock, and you got a guy with a hell of a leg as a kicker too. That's a weapon. That if you just get a little bit past midfield, you have a chance. So you have the opportunity, and as long as the plays open up for you, a play here, play there, then you need to do that because of the fact that you have a guy that's capable of moving it down the field quickly.
Yeah, if I'm a Bills fan today, I'm not mad that they're like, here you go, Josh Allen, go win us a football game. It's Josh Allen! Like, if you have a top-3, top-5 quarterback in the NFL, isn't that what you're supposed to be doing with a top-3, top-5 quarterback? If I'm a Bills fan, I'm irritated with the final defensive play call, and what I'm really irritated about why don't they feed James Cook more? Like, it was obvious that D'Amico Ryan's game plan, we're not going to let Josh Allen beat us. James Cook was, pardon the pun, cooking against the Houston Texans defense. If you give him the rock 25 times, I think the outcome's probably different.
Yeah, that's
probably different.
My biggest takeaway, anti-Texans, right from the jump, was the fact that we knew going in that Derrick Henry, they had a hard time stopping Derrick Henry in the run. What I saw right from the jump was, they had a hard time stopping anybody that runs the football on the other team. And that Cook, even in that short pass game, look, they were, what, third and 12, 15, 17, 18 yards? Screen pass to Cook, and he gets all of it and then some, to where you're like, man, they can't stop him and they can't stop the run. That's going to be a problem.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Busy show today. Don't ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. I believe. What do you believe after the college football weekend? Mailbag Monday. We'll get to game balls today as well, now that baseball season is over. 713-780-ESPN. We'll get your thoughts on yesterday's win. 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. We're on the YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on the Twitter X. Blankers at Pac-Man. Joel Bryan's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN97.5. And ESPN 92.5.
Guys, a moment for Vanderford Air, and you can go to VanderfordAir.com and see all the services they offer. They can do your plumbing, repiping. They can do anything to do with your heating and your cooling systems, particularly your air conditioning and your HVAC. And that's what I'm here to talk to you about right now, because they're the best in the business, and they back up everything they do with exactly what you need when you're dealing with a company that provides services. They put everything in writing. They give you a written estimate. They'll give you the estimate to fix whatever you got going on and replace a part. They'll give you the estimate to what it would cost to replace the system if it's getting older. But the big thing that it starts is everything's guaranteed, and it's 100% satisfaction guaranteed of your money back. It starts for when you call them. They are going to be at your door within 24 hours, guaranteed. After that, when they figure out what's going on with your system, they are going to tell you exactly what I said, what it's going to cost to fix it by replacing a part, what it would cost to fix the entire system, put it in writing, and give it to you. And then that system, then that guarantee process really goes into place. You are going to be 100% satisfied because of the fact that the work that their workers are going to do is going to be to your satisfaction. The temperature that your unit is going to cool to is going to be to your satisfaction. The system and the parts and everything, the way it works and it sounds and what they told you, is going to be exactly what they told you it was going to do. And that everything leads you to believe that this is exactly why I went to Vanderford, and this is a company that gets the job done right. If there's any issues with that and you call them, 100% satisfaction guaranteed. They will give you your money back if you're not happy. That's why I tell you to go to them, because they're going to take care of you, no questions asked, and they're going to make sure there's little room for questions, because they're going to put it all in writing and back up the work that they do. Check them out today. Go to VanderfordAir.com, but call them and save this number in your phone anytime that you need them, so that in case you're looking for an AC company and you forget about me talking about them on the air, oh, I saved the number in my phone, 281-557 Cool. It's that simple. 281-557-COOL. Whether you're calling them to set up an appointment or you want to save the number when you need an air conditioning person right away, that's the number I tell you to call. 281-557-COOL or VanderfordAir.com.
Loaded, ready to rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
A 59-yarder. Snap. Placement. Sweeps the leg. Fair bear. It's gone. Clutch City. Houston gets the W.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
How about Ian Eagle dropping the Clutch City reference? I like that, Ian.
Great the call.
10.
Yeah,
10.
What? Come on.
I mean, at least they didn't say Houston, you don't have a problem.
That would not have given it to everyone.
How many national guys, though, are going Clutch City with a Texans win? Maybe Nance?
He's from here, though.
Yeah. Understand. Thank you for that.
I know. That's my point,
mansplaining
though.
Mansplaining where Jim Nance is from. Like, he's not a Houston Cougar.
I'm making the point to give him credit. I can't even get the name out.
Ian's right.
Yeah, Ian Eagle. Credit for a national guy who's not from here to get that reference in. I thought it was great.
You know, the last time. I don't think Ian Eagle has done it. He hasn't done a Texans game this year, right?
I don't think so.
This was his first one.
Yeah, it was
pretty
his
sure
first
his first one. Do you know the last Houston game Ian Eagle called?
Was a college basketball game in the tournament
against Duke. I didn't have a good feeling with Ian Eagle on the mic. Did not have a good feeling. Ian Eagle, gentleman of a man, sweetheart of a man. Anytime he sees me, he comes up. Hey, Jeremy, how you doing? I think he cheats by reading the game notes. I don't think he knows my name by heart. Still but cool. I am an Ian Eagle fan. I do think he's very good. I thought it was a 10. I thought it was a 10 on the call.
Son got a cakewalk.
No doubt.
Son got the silver spoon to dictate his entire career.
No doubt about that. Kyme Fairbairn, the greatest Houston kicker of all time. Probably already was, but the debate is over. Not only because he made a 59-yard game winner as the buzzer expired, but he also broke Chris Brown's record for the most points in Houston Texans history. Kyme Fairbairn, the greatest kicker that has ever lived in the deep steel blue, Liberty White, and... Battle Red.
As one of the guys that was critical of the contract when he signed it because he became like a top five kicker in the league when Bill O'Brien gave him the extension, and I had questions about that. Not that it was more of an indication on his kicking as it was, I just don't know if you're going to pay a kicker that much money. And you and I had the conversation. I think the reality for a lot of people was you saw what you were or couldn't be when you didn't have him a year ago. When you went through what it was like when he was hurt and you saw the options that weren't out there and the guys that the Amendolas of the world that you had to bring in to double cross your fingers and hope to God that kickers were making kicks from 49. And now you got a guy that 50 plus is basically automatic. He's missed one kick. And he's drilling everything for you and has become a true offensive weapon for this team this season.
Yeah.
You got to give him his flowers.
I think a lot, I would agree that he was overpaid whenever Bill O'Brien gave him the contract because Bill O'Brien was overpaying everybody. And I think that with him being probably overpaid at the time, it led to some resentment from the fan base to thinking that he was overrated. It's like the Kirk Cousins thing. I think Kirk Cousins overpaid, but I don't think he's overrated. I think he's rated pretty properly. Kyme early on, I think he was overpaid, but I don't think that he was overrated. And I think he has improved tremendously, too. I think he's a much better kicker now than he was under the Bill O'Brien era. Congratulations to Kyme making the field goal and also becoming the all-time point leader in Houston Texans history. So here are the two sides of the spectrum on the HRMP listener line. 713-780-ESPN. We'll collect your thoughts. 713-780-3776. 3283. So barely beating a winless Jacksonville team by four and an unhealthy Buffalo team by three is elite? Cool. No one said elite. We said upper echelon. And then here's the contrasting text message that we got as well. It's the NFL! 2 exclamation points. You can lose any given Sunday. Every game is not going to be a blowout. As long as it's a win, that's all that matters. So there are the two opposite ends of the spectrums. One, just win however you can get it in the NFL, baby. Just win, baby. The other side of the spectrum, so barely beating a winless Jacksonville team and then an unhealthy Buffalo Bills team, you're not any good. You're not elite.
Yeah, I think that we always talk about the fact, and I always say, look, the truth may be somewhere in the middle, but at the same time, you just have to be realistic about the fact that at the end of the day, if you play like just complete garbage for the most of the game, but you find a way to find a way and you win the game, you'll take that all day, every day, because as they always say, how tough it is to win in the NFL. At the same time, when you're trying to rate a team 5 weeks into the regular season, if they're capable of winning a Super Bowl, well, half of it is because you're trying to evaluate your team, where they are at that point in the season. The other half of it is evaluating the rest of the league to figure out, hey, while they're doing that too, who looks like they can really play all facets of the game, or they've got guys that really make them a team that you're going to be reckoning with later in the year, especially in your own conference. And I think the combination of that is where you kind of lie in the middle going, yeah, there's still work to do for the Texans. Yeah, they haven't dominated like we thought they might be able to. But at the same time, 4-1 with a lot of shortcomings that people are pointing out is a damn good place to be as opposed to the Bengals. Or we mentioned the Eagles and the Niners and the fact that they have been less than what expectations were. And even the Ravens who are now scratching and clawing trying to get back because of the way they started. You didn't start that way, so that means something.
Yeah, I don't believe in the ugly win thing in the NFL. Really, nowhere. You win a ball game, that's the job. The job's to go 1-0. It's not to go 1-0 against the spread. It's not to go 1-0 to public perception. They beat Buffalo. They beat the Bills, who were an upper echelon team. Where did the spread end up in this game yesterday? Wasn't it Texans like, or Bills
Texas
minus
two
one?
One or,
I think it was flip-flopping throughout the
I'll
week.
Find yeah. it.
But I don't think it was anywhere. I think that the margin was always Texans minus one, minus one and a half, Buffalo minus one,
and
minus
Texans.
One and a half. Okay, so it ended up Texans minus one and a half. Texans covered. They covered by twice that. So, like, the whole, well, you barely beat a Buffalo. Well, they were favored by 1.5. They won by 3. Just saying. Just saying. 7-1, our friend Jermaine on Twitter. I think the fans aren't used to seeing a consistently successful team. The ebb and flow of their thoughts are too wild after wins and losses. I don't think that Texans fans are unique to that, though. I think that's every NFL fan
sure
base. They won't look perfect all the time. Look for improvements on past bad habits instead of expecting perfection. I do think expecting perfection is not realistic in the NFL. In the NFL, where the other teams are all really good. Jacksonville won their first game yesterday. Jacksonville, when they play well, they're gonna win football games. They're just not always gonna play well. Like you look around the NFL yesterday, like the Jets. The Jets entered the season about the same expectations as the Texans, right? Like best case scenario, maybe an AFC championship game, AFC divisional round team. The Jets are 2-3. They lost to Minnesota yesterday. Now, you did get blown out by Minnesota when you went there. The Bengals, 1-4. You lose a home game against Baltimore.
That you went wild offensively, and a couple weeks ago, you had your receiver saying, we're the team to beat in the AFC, and now you've gotten beaten so much that you have your quarterback coming out and saying, we're not an upper echelon team.
Yeah, and then they're not. Yeah, he did. He's like, yeah, we're not that championship team. San Francisco, best team in the NFC. They're 2-3 now. They lost a home game to Arizona yesterday. But we're going
to
complain about
they've lost
not
the
being
to the Rams
perfect
as well.
Yeah. I mean, the Seahawks, they get the Giants coming all the way from across the coast. The Giants win that game by 9. Now, they did use the blocked field goal to extend the lead to 9 whenever Seattle was going for the game-tying field goal. But you just win in the NFL. You just win in the NFL and you move on. Thank goodness they started better than the Astros. Couldn't take another bad start. That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you look at a season ago when we were talking about the fact that the things that stuck with us, teams you were supposed to beat that you didn't beat, like the Jets, like the Falcons, like Carolina. Now we're sitting there and having people bitch about the fact that you didn't play your best football, but you beat the teams that either you were supposed to beat or you beat good teams, and that's not good enough.
Ocho, a friend of mine, said the Texans defense has an innate ability to make opposing quarterbacks miss wide open receivers downfield. I can't stop laughing. Allen missed some throws.
He missed one big throw.
Early, what was it, first quarter, he had Mac Hollins like loose down the left sideline, overthrew him by like 3 yards. He missed Mac Hollins on that final third down in their last series. He had him open over the middle of the field.
What was the deep ball? The deep ball was he threw it over the wrong shoulder, and he threw it just a little too far. But, yeah, I mean, again, we've seen the big plays. We saw the two in the Jacksonville game. We saw them in the Indianapolis game. There's no doubt that the opponents have had plenty of opportunities to capitalize on deep balls that they just didn't connect on.
I had the Texans 3-2 at this point. So the fact that they're 4-1 and winning close games, cool. They're 4-1. They're 4-1.
And
I have a 3-2.
Next week.
They play
the
Patriots. New England, although,
yeah. I mean,
it might be shorthanded in that game.
It might be shorthanded, but they're also might be making a switch to a rookie quarterback making his first start, and their offense is putrid.
It was Bryce Young's first win.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bring that up.
First
this week,
time we get to hit this drop.
Sassy.
You're being a little sassy right now.
It's facts.
I make the point to say the Texans should, quote unquote, asterisk, whatever, get to 5-1, which would exceed, I think, almost everyone's expectations.
I had them at 6-0.
Yeah, you did.
I had them at six and then you had them.
Right.
But that still could happen too. But I'm just saying, I felt confident in the early part of this schedule, but I also didn't think that the one loss was going to be against a Minnesota team that I didn't think was very good.
You also had them winning 9 games and somehow got to 10 and minus 1.
And I'm still not falling off of that either. To the point being, you're supposed to beat these teams that that everybody looks at on schedule and says, oh, you're supposed to beat them. But then it's style points with everybody. Like, you beat them, but did you really play good football? Did you do this well enough or that well enough? Well, then that, strikes against you. No, you won the football game.
You know what the great Kelvin Sampson says about ugly wins? Do they complain about Miss USA's bunion on her toe?
That's a pretty good
point. Do they?
No.
You don't even know.
No, unless she wears open-toed shoes.
713-780-ESPN. What other thoughts do you have from this one? We'll take your thoughts. Blankers, a lot of admiration for a certain defensive player. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. We're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ocho has no chill. When Nico went down, was I the only person thinking how sweet it would be to have another speedy, big-bodied go-to receiver for Stroud, like Brian Thomas Jr.? Ocho always with Brian Thomas
Boy,
Jr.
he loves Brian Thomas Jr. Yeah,
you see that catch he had yesterday, though?
Oh, yeah.
That guy's good. I think Ocho nailed that one, though, if I'm being honest.
In terms of just talent about, yeah.
Yeah. 0979, Josh's been overrated along with Joe in Cincinnati. Burrow overrated? I'm not going to go there. You know,
Burrow
I banged
really
the drum.
Damn good yesterday.
Yeah, he was. He's had a really dang good career when he's healthy. You could say the injury proneness thing, can't trust him. But whenever he's playing, Joe Burrow has been he's been him. Burrow's been him.
No question.
Now you know how I feel about Josh Allen. So like, I've been banging that drum for a long time.
Now, in looking at it and understanding the fact that, look, a lot of why he gets a lot of the love that he gets, too, is because he does it with more than just his arm. He does it with his legs. He has a way. But I think that, you know, this season, I don't think there's any denying the start that he got off to. But again, that's kind of why you should give the Texans some flowers, too. And the fact that it wasn't just, you can't just say, well, Josh Allen had a bad day. Well, why did he have a bad day? Because of the fact that he was feeling pressure and that the defense that he was seeing was different than maybe he had seen all season long with some guys that maybe played at a different level than some of the teams that he played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Landon on the east side. What's up, Landon?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, this clown talking about the hurt and not all healthy Bills team. It's the NFL, middle of the season. Nobody's healthy. The Texans aren't healthy. Nobody's healthy. Have you watched this game before? Get off the couch. Go back to Dallas with the rest of the homos. I'm out.
Okay.
What did he say? Can you not say that word? Thank you, Landon.
No, I cannot say that on
air. You dumped him, but Landon's still on the line. You can't say that on the air?
No.
It's 2024.
No.
Probably more reason you can't say it.
Probably. Right? Probably more than ever.
Right? Yeah. No.
I think you can say that.
Okay, I'm not going to risk it.
I think you can. 713-780-ESPN. Can you say that on the air?
No.
713-7. I think you can.
I believe in Brian taking the right approach.
No,
though.
I don't think
he'd rather
wrong.
Border on
no,
the.
No, no, no. I'm not saying that Brian was wrong there. I think you can say it though. And are we sure he didn't say homeless?
Oh,
I'm 100%,
pretty sure. Yes,
I'm 100%.
Okay,
I'm 100%.
We've had our caller evaluations lately, but we don't have to go to the tape for that one.
I do agree with Landon that nobody's healthy this time of year.
Is that part of his call correct?
Landon's not hanging out on Montrose. I can tell you that. Can I make another point about Landon? Didn't sound anything like a Landon? Like I've never heard a Landon have that deep of a voice. Usually a little bit more like higher pitched, I think. Like, that was a deep-voiced Landon.
Are you stereotyping Landon
yes,
as being more kind of like polo-wearing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Am I wrong?
I don't think you're off,
no.
No, that was the weirdest Landon I've ever heard. It didn't sound like a Landon. Maybe he was trying to disguise his name because he was going to say something you're not allowed to say on Brian's airwaves.
Probably.
Maybe. Yeah,
maybe.
9866 is trolling us. He says, Skull! I actually like the Vikings. I know you don't because you're a Packer fan. I have a healthy respect for the Minnesota Vikings. I am a big Kevin O'Connell fan. I like him a lot. I like Justin Jefferson a lot. And I really like the story of Sam Darnold right now.
I think that the only thing that deters me from completely liking the Vikings is the fact that they've been an arch rival forever in that division, but I've got a friend on the coaching staff. Justin Jefferson. I think Justin Jefferson is the best receiver in football.
Is he better than Chase?
I think he is overall, but I think it's a healthy discussion because I think you go with speed versus the physicality of Chase.
1-1A sort of situation.
But if you're fighting over those two, either one that you end up with, you're going to be in a great position. You talk about the storylines. I'm with you on Darnold, but I think that the fascination of the Brian Flores storyline, too, of a guy that, because of what happened as a head coach and whoever you believe, there's a lot of negativity, but you can't help but give the guy his flowers for what he's done as a defensive coordinator because he's just doing it every week a different way.
Yeah, their defense is unreal. He can scheme up a defense. I think he's such a good schemer defensively. I think he's going to get another head coaching job.
I think he will, too.
And I don't think it's going to work. I don't think he's a good head coach. I don't think he's a good head coach.
You know, when we always talk about some guys are just destined to be really good coordinators but not good head coaches, he needs someone that can handle more. We talk about guys that needed someone in the box that could control when to throw the red flag or when the probabilities to understand the analytics of when to go for it, when not to go for it. He needs someone that can handle the communication aspects of some of the job.
Yeah.
He can do the defense. He can do some of the talent evaluation.
It kind of sounds like you're saying he needs someone so he can only be a defensive coordinator as a head coach.
Maybe a little more than that, but the talent evaluation overall and the needs of a team. But let's try and stay out of the communication with the owners and things.
And the quarterback, apparently. Yeah.
Maybe he learned his lesson, though. You know, like we see player development a lot. Like, players are much better in year 4 or 5 than they are 1 and 2. Why can't a head coach be the same way? Like, why couldn't he learn from? And it wasn't all bad in Miami. Like, he won a lot more games there than the previous regime. Although, that's not saying much. Like, it wasn't all bad. Like,
no,
Texans,
you're right,
took a look at Brian Flores. Although I don't know if that's a great, you know, feather in the cap for Brian Flores after they employed David Culley and Lovie Smith. Although they did end up with D'Amico Ryans, and they interviewed Kevin O'Connell. Like, they interviewed some dudes that third time around.
But it's also part of the lawsuit and the reason why he filed the lawsuit and the fact that, yeah, you're right, that guys should get a second chance, but a lot of guys, particularly those that are African-American, don't get that second chance. And now when you bring the lawsuit on top of it, teams are going to be leery of what the baggage is they're bringing on and not just getting an unbelievable defensive-minded head coach.
His defensive scheme is so good that I want to see what it looks like with a second chance. I don't know if it would work, but I want to see what a second chance would look like. And that lawsuit's still going on. That's still pending. Yeah. It's still happening. Who was it that impressed you in the defensive end? You said you had somebody that caught your eye defensively that was a stud yesterday. Who was that stud?
The biggest thing to me is that El Shaair should get more credit than – look, I know that there was a lot of sexy signings. I know that there was the big Danielle Hunter signing, and it was awesome. I know the fact that they went out and made the trades to get Mixon, to get Stephon Diggs. But if you watch what Azeez El Shaair did yesterday, where he was on the football field, what he did in terms of putting together a complete game in the passing game, the fact that he got his hands on two different footballs where he could have had picks but at least had the pass defended, and he did it the right way. And then when you look at the fact that he was in the backfield, he was doing his best, he was all over the field flying around stopping the run, 8 tackles, two the pass defended. But then you take into the fact that he lost 10 pounds in about 24 to 48 hours and was in the emergency room on Saturday.
That was the report that I saw. I didn't see that report till during the game, but yes,
I never saw that report.
Yeah, and so I saw it on social media, then I saw it during the game, then they were talking about it when they kind of ISO'd a camera on him because he had been all over the place, and you go, okay, that's not normal, but at the same time, you don't expect the kind of performance you're seeing from a guy like that. But more so than anything else, it's the D'Amico system. We're talking about shutting down Josh Allen. We're talking about doing it because D'Amico needs guys that are going to play his way, the same way he let really good, we thought, defensive tackles go because he wanted to do things differently and get different types of players in here to be on his defense. El Shaair was the biggest pickup. No matter who you had a year ago, was not going to quarterback the defense the way he does. The fact that you can see why D'Amico wants a guy like this that has the athleticism to cover in pass coverage, but still the toughness and the physicality to get in the backfield and wreak havoc. That dude makes that entire defense go, and he's impressive to watch if you isolate him on it all.
10 pounds in 24 hours, is he on Ozempic? I need that diet. He impressed me too. He early in the game he missed that tackle on James Cook in a little dump off, and I was like, if this is what they're getting from Azeez El Shaair today, like, I admire the toughness, I admire the courage to play through an illness, extreme nausea is what I read. It's like, okay, like, if you're gonna miss those tackles though, you shouldn't be on the field. And then after that, it was a completely different person. I thought he showed tremendous speed a couple of times that forced Josh Allen to throw the ball when normally Josh Allen might have been running. Like, he beat him to the angle, he beat him to the edge, forcing Allen to throw errantly, which he was doing all day. And then you mentioned the coverage plays. Now, I think he has bricks for hands because
especially
should have had an interception.
Those
were back-to-back plays.
Yeah.
Back-to-back.
The second one in the flat.
Back-to-back plays.
Really? Yeah, I didn't realize that they're close together.
I didn't either. Watching the condensed game this morning, I hadn't either. The first one to me was the more impressive play because he's like stride for stride. He was probably beat, but I expect you to
is
be
that Kincaid?
Beat. Yeah. Like, if you're close to step for step with Dalton Kincaid and you're doing a little PBU when, you know, Dalton Kincaid is the guy that you're guarding, that's the tip of the cap there, Azeez El Shaair. I didn't know you had coverage like that. And a good throw might have been completed. Like, if you lead Kincaid there, you drop it in the bucket, you throw it over Kincaid's shoulder, it's probably completed. But I thought that it showed good coverage by El Shaair. And then the second one was a little bit kind of fortunate. Like, I don't think that was like a great coverage play. It was more being in the right spot at the right time. Probably should have caught it. Probably should have caught it, hit him right in the hands, but that's why he plays defense and not offense.
Yeah, you're right in the fact that if you want to question anything, you can question his hands, because that second one did hit him in a bad spot. The left and the right were both on the football. But overall, just the fact that you see a guy that can kind of bring the wood the way he does, but then also have the speed to get all around the field is something they didn't have a year ago. And they didn't have a guy that played both the pass game and the run game the way he does. And to bring that physicality, that attitude, and to have that D'Amico system in his back pocket so he can help others be in the right spot to do the kind of things. I think he's helped Petrie a lot in terms of when he gets down in the box and some of those things.
I think Harris was getting there, but what Harris lacked that I think Alshire has is kind of the moxie, kind of the attitude. I think the physical nature of, like, I'm going to knock your head off on every single play. I think that Harris eventually gets there, but being such a young guy, kind of, like, Harris early last year gave me the impression of, like, he wasn't very confident in himself. And then by the end of the year, it's like he was super confident and started to play to where I think Azeez Alshire is playing now. Hopefully they get Harris back soon, because I think that would be a wonderful tandem. Although I like what Henry To'oTo'o is doing. He's far exceeded my expectations, I'll admit.
One of the unsung guys on this team so far to date has got to be To'oTo'o, because of the fact that we didn't expect much. And we kept hearing about the intangibles. Oh, he really knows the game, the X's and O's. His instincts are really good, but the size, the athleticism, it's not really there. He probably is what he's going to be in the league for his entire career. So there was natural questions about when do we get Christian Harris back and how quickly can we get him back, because this is going to be a problem. It hasn't been a problem because Henry To'oTo'o has been doing a damn good job.
Yeah, he has. And credit to him. Like, he said that he was fat last year, lost a lot of weight, and he's playing quicker, and he's being a little bit more aggressive. He's playing more physical. He's been a better tackler. He's exceeded my expectations. I thought there was a huge drop-off after Alshire Christian Harris to Henry To'oTo'o, and I still think it's significant. Like, you get Harris playing the way that he was last year, I still think he's far better than what Henry To'oTo'o is exceeding my expectations and doing now. But it's not as big a drop from 2 to 3 as I thought it was going to be. I thought they were going to be in big trouble if Henry To'oTo'o had to play tons of snaps.
I thought they were going to get exposed.
Yeah, me too. And it hasn't been that way.
No, not at all. And that's, you're right, credit to him. Maybe he also had nausea. He just had it for a longer period of time to lose that weight. But at the same time, I don't think just losing weight is the reason why he got to where he got to. But I think he's comfortable in the league now, and he understands the speed difference. And he went to Alabama for a reason. He has some talent. So the fact that he's putting it all together is...
He went to NIL. That's why he went to Alabama.
Maybe.
But you're right. It's a combination of it all. It's a combination of, okay, let me lose weight because I know this is the speed that I have to play. And then improving in tackling. He wasn't a great tackler last year. He's been really good. He had that blow-up play yesterday on the screen where he went through the blocker and made the tackle.
The backfield, yeah.
Both. Like, it's one thing to, like, blow up the block to allow your teammates to come make the stop. He did both. He blew up the block and then tackled the receiver. Yeah, that was the best play I've seen for Henry To'oTo'o, maybe in his career.
I think that's a level of physicality we didn't see in his early stages with the Texans. And maybe, again, that's another indication of when you're around guys like Alshire, who we know is going to border on being overly physical, that it can rub off on him too. And a guy that playing the similar position and right next to him is going to be a guy tutoring him on what D'Amico's expecting in this defense has had to be a positive effect as well.
All right, do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. What are areas the Texans have to clean up if they want to get to what they aspire to get to? It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Hey, bettors, that's you and you, all of you that are listening are the sports bettors I'm talking to. And I'm here to tell you about my favorite sports book and casino, and that's BetUS.com. One more game this week, tonight. So get in on the action. Football is here. So get in on that action. I endorse one sports book and casino. Of course, that is BetUS. If you want a game plan to win this season, check out BetUS. BetUS went large for you with a massive offer. How about 125% sign-up bonus? So not your first deposit, not your first two deposits, but all of your first three deposits. That's right. A 125% bonus on your first three deposits. BetUS offers value other sports books simply do not. Gambler's insurance, crypto bonuses, casino bonuses, plus they have all the products you need. Competitive odds, parlays, live betting, odds boost, and prop betting. When you're ready to lay down your bet, give your bet an edge. Why not combine your sign-up bonus with knowledge? Get that knowledge with expert analysis, picks, and predictions on all major sports on their very own BetUS TV. Get started at BetUS.com or give them a call at 1-800-MY-BETUS. BetUS, where the game begins.
ESPN 97.5.
Come coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. It's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. What are areas the Texans have to clean up? You got a lot of other shows right now. They're, oh, yeah, everything, sunshine, rainbows. Certain people in Dallas that are into certain things. But do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. 713-780-3776. Blankers, what are you not ignoring in victory, what you wouldn't in defeat?
I think the first thing is that the Texans can't stop the run. I think the fact that when we talked about what Cook was able to do, but the fact that we've seen this kind of through it consistently throughout the season, that we have to be aware of the fact that as much as D'Amico got his guys that he wanted at defensive tackle, they were supposed to be guys that were supposed to be good at stopping the run. They struggled mightily to stop the run. Their biggest offensive weapon, which you thought was going to be Josh Allen, and if you do the Belichick mentality of D'Amico's defense taking away Josh Allen beating you by himself, Cook almost did it all by himself, because every time they needed a big play, he got the ball. When he ran the ball, he got chunk yards and good yards consistently. When they used him in the pass game, he did the same. And I think that throughout the game, they struggled to stop the run, and that's going to be something you're going to see more frequently until they prove that they find a way to stop it.
You don't think that was game plan specific? Like, because you're not going to stop everything against an NFL team. You're going to have to give in certain areas to take in others. I think a big part of yesterday's game plan was that they were so Josh Allen-centric that they were willing to give up some runs to Cook.
Maybe some, but I think that just straight like run scenarios and just straight run blocking, like the Texans were getting, they were getting manhandled down the defensive line. The holes were very big. And then the tackling was poor.
Where
once he got by the first line of the defense, you know, he was going whichever direction he wanted. They were struggling to bring him down.
They ran for 150 yards. I mean, that's a lot. Now, Allen did have 54 of those, so like the rest of the Bills were under 100. If you look at the season numbers for the Texans, they're 16th in the NFL in rushing yards allowed per game, so it's smack dab in the middle at 120. For me, the don't ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. How are you calling a pass play on 3rd and 5, tied at 20, 44 seconds left to play, at the Buffalo Bill 39. Why are you calling a pass play in that spot? I'm sitting there watching because they're trying to milk the clock. Darre freaking slid shy of the first down marker, by the way. Texans got a favorable spot. Yeah. But you could tell the Texans are like, okay, we're going to be the final team that touches this ball. We're going to either Kymie Fairbairn's going to win it for us, or we're going to go to overtime. Dalton Schultz runs out of bounds on that second down completion, which it's like, okay, don't love that, but you can live with it because there's 44 seconds left in the game. The Buffalo Bills do not have a timeout. You're already at the 39, so yes, it's a long kick, 56 yards, but I mean, Fairbairn made a 59-yarder to win it. Everybody that's watching that game, I'm sure, was yelling, run the football, run the football. What do the Texans do? They come out and empty. They empty out the backfield. Mm-hmm. Still at that point, I was like, well, here comes the draw. Here's that Trevor Lawrence, 4th and 1, shotgun draw up the middle. They're going to try to get Stroud to get 2 or 3 yards, turn a 58-yard field goal into a 55-yard field goal. Bobby Slowick dials up a passing play, and then C.J. Stroud, I don't know what happened there. C.J. Stroud was asked after the game, and he was like, yeah, I didn't think it was grounding. I disagree with C.J. Stroud. How is that not grounding? But how are you calling a passing play in that spot? That's an obvious halfback dive, run up the middle. If you get stuffed, oh well, here comes an opportunity for a 57-yard field goal and the win. Buffalo's not getting the ball back. A 3rd and 5 pass play in that spot was asinine.
It was the only thing they couldn't do.
Only thing they couldn't do.
Which is funny because obviously coming from the same system, the Kyle Shanahan, it's similar to what happened in that Falcons Super Bowl when they gave up the 28-3 to lead the Patriots. The only situation they couldn't do is drop back and pass Matt Ryan, get sacked, and they get knocked out of field goal range. Yeah, that was literally the only thing you could not do was lose yardage on a sack or something like that. Penalty, don't pass, run the ball.
Run the ball.
Take the result and kick.
You know what would have been better there? A quarterback nil would have been better there.
Anything. Just don't lose yardage.
D'Amico was asked today, well, we didn't want to get stuffed. A stuff there is not the worst thing in the world.
It's not losing
10 yards.
A stuff
is okay in that spot. And not only did they not run it, they emptied out the backfield.
That's what the most thing that bothered me. The pre-snap, the fact that he's empty.
At least give the threat.
Yes.
At least give the threat.
What are they thinking? What I don't have, and D'Amico answered, yeah, D'Amico, you know, we didn't want to get stuffed. Like, that was his best answer, and maybe, like, he, you know, Slowick went rogue. I don't think Slowick went rogue, but D'Amico maybe didn't override him when D'Amico probably should have overrode him. Hey, we're not going to go pass play here, Bobby. Let's run the football. That was terrible. That was terrible. And then the execution of the play was poor. Yes, CJ, you can't have an intentional grounding there, but also the Bills rush four. You have five men to block four, and the Bills got a free rusher. Yep. You have five to block four, and they got a free rusher. It's terrible play call. Stroud made a questionable decision. And then on top of that, the pass protection was poor.
Yeah, and if you want to argue that, I've seen a lot more egregious be let go in terms of the grounding, because it looked like Schultz was going one way and CJ thought he was going the other, but you still had two receivers on that side of the field to where I thought, well, you could let that go, but you can't rely on that being a call that's going to go your way. The smarter thing was, right from the pre-snap all the way through the play, just do the smart thing, which is either take no gain or a minimal gain, but set yourself up to win the game with a field goal, and you didn't do that.
You could have ran the clock out to 1 second there, too, because the Bills didn't have a timeout left. You had three timeouts remaining. So even if you run the ball for a gain of nothing, you're looking at a game-winning field goal from the 39, which 56, 57-yard field goal at that point. You didn't do that. You had to punt. It took a tremendous punt by Tommy Townsend. It took a three and out for your defense. It took a good punt return by Robert Woods. And then a 59-yard field goal for Kyahmi Fairbairn for you to win the game. That was terrible.
And a bad
terrible
call by the Bills on the play that got you the extra 5 yards to get it to 59-yard field goal.
They dropped 11. Never seen that before in my life.
The two guys were basically out of your screen.
There was at least three guys lined up at the 10.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
They asked McDermott about it in his post-game press conference. He said they had a guy in late, so they didn't get the right play call in, which is – that's awful. I hate to be a Buffalo Bills fan.
That doesn't make it better.
It was like, okay, well, that's awful. And then the other one that I have, don't ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat, 713-780-3776, and we'll get to yours on the other side of the break. Fourth and one for the Texans at the 16.5-yard line. You're up 14-3, 8 minutes left in the second quarter. So not kicking a field goal there is fine to me. Like, even if you make a field goal at 17-3, it's still a two-possession game. Yes, it's more difficult for the Bills to score two touchdowns as opposed to the touchdown two-point conversion in the field goal. But that early in the game, I'm looking to try to extend the possession lead. So you're up two possessions. If you kick a field goal, it's still two possessions. I have no problem going for it. Fourth and one at the 16.5-yard line. I think it's an automatic go for it in that specific spot. But the Texans' interior run game is not their strength. That's the last play I would call. It's a halfback dive up the middle.
Yeah, with Dare.
Dare starting about 6-7 yards into the backfield is one thing. There's no possible option you're going to do anything else. You're all jammed up on the line. And the fact is that the Bills go, oh, look what they're going to do. They're coming right down the middle. And then they just loaded up and brought everybody down the middle, too. I hated the play call. I hated the design. A lot of times, and I know because there's tape on it, but I like the fact that you run someone in motion. You give them the opportunity to think, hey, either we misdirected or we go, you know, we can run the receiver coming in motion. So maybe a lot of times you'll drop the ball to the receiver and get him out in space. But there were so many different ways, even a quarterback sneak where right away you just get it and find a gap. But the fact that Dare started so far back, too, and it looked like the only thing they could possibly run, I hated that.
Yeah, didn't like that. All right, do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. We'll get some more that we have. We'll get to yours as well. 713-780-3776. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Celebrate over 100 years of steak perfection with Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide during their anniversary sale. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED at OmahaSteaks.com today. They're America's original butcher, and only Omaha Steaks delivers a full lineup of extra-age steaks so tender, they're USDA certified tender. Their customer favorite filet mignon has even been elevated to USDA certified very tender. And that attention to quality doesn't just stop with steaks. We're talking beefy burgers, air-chilled chicken, premium pork, and so much more. And every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Shop now to save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during the anniversary sale at omahasteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code CERTIFIED. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.